At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's up, Open Floor Globe? I'm your host, Michael the Pod Pina, and I'm joined on the other line by my good friend, Sports Illustrated senior writer, young American gladiator himself, Chris Herring. How are you doing, good sir? How was your weekend?
Man, I'm about to smack you through the screen. I've never watched American Gladiator before, even though people don't think I'm telling the truth. I wasn't really into like TV and the finer.
Do you want to zoom out and just give a 20-second explanation for the listeners that don't know what the hell we're talking about right
so
now?
So on Friday, I recorded not only this podcast, but after this podcast, I recorded one with Zach Lowe. Zach Lowe mentioned, he compared something to the American Gladiator show, and I was like, I was like, oh, okay, you're describing that, but I don't know what that is. And he was like, hold on, what? He was like, how old are you? How old am I that you don't know what American Gladiators is? And I was like, I think that was before my time. And so then I got tweets from a few different people, Curtis Harris, different people who were like, that's the most ridiculous thing Chris Herring's ever said on any podcast, that he didn't watch American Gladiators, that he was too young somehow to have been part of that. I was two when that show started. And maybe 8 or 9 when it ended. Was it programming for like people that young to watch?
I recall it. I think we're the same age, Chris, and I'm not going to lie.
34?
I'm
34.
I am 34 as well.
I didn't watch this. I watched cartoons. And like, granted, watching people get, you know, sock 'em boppers basically is like something that I probably would have watched. I didn't know to watch it. So I don't know what this stuff is. And Zach is not old. You know, he's older than I am, and I think maybe by 8-9 years somewhere in there, but like I did not watch it. It's something that you were watching regularly that you can give full recaps on and rundown.
This is so glorious. Rohan wanted me to also bring this up. Rohan, Chris and I are in a group text, and we were trashing Chris over the weekend for his just absolute misrepresentation of his own age and his own memory. So I'm sorry, Chris, for having to do that to you.
Y'all were calling me the Danny Almonte of television. Like, come on now, the El Duque of television. No, I actually was not watching American Gladiator. Is it American Gladiators or American Gladiator? I don't even know. I legitimately don't know.
I think it's the singular. We can double check that.
It couldn't have been that good of a show. Y'all don't even know what the name of the show was. I'm out. I don't care anymore.
I love this. I love this so much. We're going to recap some American Gladiator episodes later on in this season. But on today's show, you and I, Chris, we will be opening up the mailbag once again, and we'll be covering a few more early season reactions. Before we do, a quick reminder to everyone to keep those emails coming in. They've been thought-provoking and wonderful. Openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Okay, so right now, Chris, on SI.com, we have up on the site the inaugural NBA power rankings of this season. You, I, and several of our colleagues were asked to rank all 30 teams and write blurbs about, just how those teams have performed over their first 2 or 3 games of the season. It's obviously a very small sample size. I don't know about you, but I had legitimate difficulty figuring out who the best team in the league is right now. I thought I would be able to pencil in the Brooklyn Nets or the Milwaukee Bucks, or I guess just one of those two teams, but I couldn't do it for, like, they just have not been as good as we thought they would be, I think, so far. So who did you have in your number one for the power ranking? And was it easier for you to choose that team, or did you also have kind of a challenging time with it? Am I making way too much of this?
You know what my biggest challenge was here this whole weekend, however you want to phrase it, mm-hmm. and trying to do the power rankings? It actually wasn't complicated in most senses. The one thing it was complicated, the teams that I was prone to put at the top of it, the team that I was prone to put at the top of it and did put at the top of it was a team that didn't play hard competition. And then the teams underneath them in some cases did. And so I was like, okay, am I more impressed with the team that I think is ultimately better that I came in higher on this season? And so even the way you phrased the question to kind of tee me up for this mm-hmm. was like, don't take expectations into it. But I took expectations into it because I think that's what you're supposed to do for a season. You know, is you bring expectations in. That's the reason that we're more willing to kind of give some rope to the Nets, for instance, even though they were very close for a minute to losing all three of their games, you know, in terms of just their games were somewhat close and a couple teams were somewhat close to losing all three of their games. If they eked out a win somewhere here or there, you can kind of forgive that. Teams that won all their games, you know, are you impressed when they're beating Oklahoma City twice or once? No. The Bulls are very much like that too, even though they looked pretty good in doing it. It's hard to give full credit for something like that. So I picked Utah, but Utah was the team that I had favored anyway.
Utah was your number one team.
Yep. Okay. But it was mostly just because that's where I would have had them start anyway. So they needed to be knocked off that perch or play themselves out of that spot. I was very close to putting Denver there because Denver was probably the most impressive team I saw over the course of the week. Also taking into account who they played.
So this is fascinating. So up on the site, what we have, which is a combination of, I think, seven writers' opinions, seven rankings, I believe. Number one was the Denver Nuggets, who are 2-0 and look really good. And Jokic threw this. I clipped it. I wrote the blurb for the Nuggets.
God, that pass.
Jokic threw this just like absolutely insane no look, one arm whip pass across the court from the post. It was like from the left block to the right corner that nearly decapitated Derek White. One of the coolest passes, and also it just like didn't do anything. It was just like,
yes, yeah. So it didn't make the highlight reels because it didn't result in an assist. Yeah. It didn't result in anything, but holy hell, that pass. I've watched
incredible.
It like 80 times.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's basically what I wrote about it. You have to watch it like 9 times if you've seen it once. So the Nuggets are number one. The Warriors, number two. They are also undefeated. And the Utah Jazz came in at number three. So you had the Utah Jazz number one on your individual ranking. I also, Chris Herring, had the Utah Jazz number one on my individual ranking. And I also had the Nuggets number two and then the Bucks number three. But just talking about the Jazz for a second, they beat down the Oklahoma City Thunder, who are, if we could rank, you know, going up to 773 instead of 30, that's where I would put the Oklahoma City Thunder. They just look like absolute garbage. So they beat up on the Oklahoma City Thunder in their season opener, and then they defeated the Sacramento Kings. I think the Kings are actually a pretty competitive team.
They look good. The Kings look good.
Yeah. I don't think the Kings are bad. Davion Mitchell is just like
a terror.
What he did to Donovan Mitchell in that game was just like, it's kind of scary. I don't even know. Like, Davion Mitchell is just a lot of fun to watch defensively. But So the Jazz are the reason why I picked them number one was a little bit of the preseason expectations, but also I just couldn't, like, I didn't know who the best team was, frankly. And I was like, okay, yeah, the Jazz have not lost. Yeah, the Jazz have not lost. They have the number one net rating in the NBA. I was looking at some of their particulars, but you can't really get too in the weeds with statistics because
the Thunder. Nope.
Can't do it. And it's two games. And then I looked at it and I was like, okay, their starting lineup It's just been a juggernaut again, and I respect that. And I feel like even if they played a better team, and they've got a couple of pretty good opponents coming up, like they're going to be a pretty good basketball team. Rudy Gay still hasn't played a game yet, also, which you and I loved the Rudy Gay addition. And they just look like the Jazz. Like there was, like they haven't been disappointed. They haven't been the Nets. They haven't, like, none of their individual players have really struggled. So I'm just like, okay, like the Jazz are the best team. It means absolutely nothing right now, but that's just that's kind of what I settled on.
Yeah, I mean, it was the same exact same. I'm not even gonna put too much time into this, just because it was the same rationale I had. I thought about it. I looked at, you know, again, the Nuggets did play tougher competition. I think, you know, obviously you would take that into account. I was trying to think about the way I would do college football rankings or something, where and some
where's
people do this.
Where's Michigan right now, Chris?
Six. They play Michigan State, who's 7 and also undefeated this weekend. Massive game. Massive implications. I have a wedding this weekend, which not the greatest weekend to have a wedding to go to out of town when, and a Michigan alum, a friend of mine. So I'm hoping that he can make accommodations for us. Somehow I feel like he's not going to. Anyway, so that will be a struggle. Anyway, but no, I mean, it's one of those things where, like, are you weighing the strength of schedule? It's also week one. Like, my thought was it really doesn't matter that much. This will shake itself out soon. I have Washington and Minnesota in my top 10 or 11. Might be the last time that ever happens, you know, for the rest of the season. That's fine.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not expecting Minnesota to just anchor a spot there for the whole year. I'm just not. If I'm wrong on that, I'm happy to be wrong. I think I was even saying on the last podcast that I think they have the potential to be good, you know, or better than people are expecting. So if that's the case, great. I don't expect it to be necessarily. So I'm sure stuff will fall off. But I feel like give the teams that have won the benefit of the doubt. So I had, you know, I want to say all of them, Memphis. I had the Bulls up until the Knicks had lost. I had them very high in the power rankings. You know, give these teams their flowers for the, you know, the like flowers where the smell goes out after a while very quickly. It might happen here too. So, you know, we'll just enjoy it. But I think Utah deserves, you know, to be considered maybe the strongest team in the league until they prove otherwise.
Yeah, that's really well said. I think let's use the power rankings kind of as a roadmap through. I have a bunch of questions for you just about what we've seen so far from some of the teams. And I'm curious, you know, I mentioned some teams that I thought I would be able to just kind of pencil in number one before this exercise even began, and then they started playing basketball, and they were not worthy. I'm just kind of curious, like, which team, I'm going to give you some team names, which team has been the biggest disappointment to you so far? And the four that really stick out to me, and maybe one of them, I'll just say the four. The four that stick out to me are the Nets, the Lakers, the Celtics, the Suns, and that's it. Are one of those four teams the most disappointing team in the league so far to you, or is it somebody else?
I mean, let's be real here. I debated whether or not I could put it's one of those four teams, first of all, but I debated whether or not I could count one of them a disappointment because I was almost expecting it.
And it's the Lakers.
Yes. I mean, it's I mean, like, we knew some of this stuff was going to be a mess, and lo and behold, as we talk about teams that, you know, saved themselves for being at the bottom, the very bottom of my power rankings, I would not have put the Lakers at 30, but they would have probably sniffed like 23, 24, 25 if they had lost all three games.
Where did you have the Lakers?
I don't even remember where I had them. Let me look. I think I put them at like 17, if I remember correctly. Which was somewhat generous because they did not really look at, you know, they get some benefit of the doubt about the fact that they've just got LeBron and AD. And, you know, if you want to say it, Russ, I guess. But that Russ fit, man, I don't think we were just imagining that. Yeah, I had them at 17. Right behind the Pacers, right in front of Dallas, who looked like ass. And I've said that several times last weekend on our podcast, so that should not come as a surprise. The Lakers, though, I mean, you very quickly see where they're really going to miss certain guys. I mean, Carmelo filled a massive void for them yesterday, shooting better than I've seen Carmelo shoot in years, quite frankly, where shots that were barely hitting the net. I mean, they're just such pretty shots from everywhere. So he made it to, was it 9th all time on the list now for scoring?
Yes.
But I mean, look at Russ's numbers, man. I mean, just it'll feel like a dead horse at a certain point. They're just kind of beating this drum, this horse, whatever you want to call it. Just relatively inefficient, not even relatively, just inefficient. And it's gonna hinder what they're doing until they figure it out. You're going to have nights where LeBron shoots well. You're going to have nights where AD shoots well. You might even have nights where Bron shoots well. But you've got a lot of new rotation guys, a lot of new guys on that end of the floor. You've got Russ. And the thing that I said, lo and behold, you're going to have struggles with Russ. Opposing point guards are kind of dicing them up. The one guy that really didn't was Steph, and he had a triple-double. He shot poorly in that game, but he still had a triple-double. You had Chris Paul go for, 23 and 14, I think it was, which 23 is not a bad scoring night for Chris Paul, and 14 assists is a lot of assists.
In a total blowout.
Yes, and then you had Ja Morant, basically like a child trying to figure out how high he could count, and he got all the way to 40 or whatever he got, and they were fortunate that he missed a free throw at the very end of the game. It was basically the only shot he missed the whole game. So, to be fair, I guess you can't put all that on Russ because Russ is not even defending the point guard a lot of the time. They've got Bazemore doing a lot of that. But maybe that speaks to a problem as well, that you're already a couple games into a season and you're not even giving Russ those assignments, which I think back to Golden State when they won their first title. And Steve Kerr said that's a big part of what this is just trying to instill the confidence in Steph that he hasn't been viewed as a good defender. He's been viewed as someone that teams can pick on. We've got to nip that in the bud right now. Take the challenge on. You can do it. You're capable of doing it. Just get out there and do it. We're a couple games in, and we've already given that assignment away. So, yeah, I just don't feel great about it, man. It doesn't mean that they can't be better, that they won't be better. Doesn't mean the guys won't gel at a certain point, but I was not impressed. And I very easily could have been 0-3 for the Lakers early on, very easily.
Yeah, Russ is minus 27, which is the worst on the team. He's shooting 35% from the floor. He's 1-for-11 from behind the three-point line. And, still trying to figure things out, I suppose.
It's under 50% from the line, too, right?
I
think he's in the 40s somewhere.
That is correct. Yes, he's 5-for-12 from the free throw line.
Okay, so I'll give him that, but yeah.
A little bit of a turnover machine as well. Has been making some plays off the bounce. I think the AD-Russ pick and roll is something to keep an eye on as they try to figure each other out and get some chemistry down. But when LeBron's on the floor with him, LeBron's the one who's initiating the offense, bringing the ball up the floor. And it's just going to be interesting to see how that all works. I'm very pessimistic about it still. So, Chris, if the Lakers are not the disappointing team, who's the disappointing team for you?
No, I was saying the Lakers were my disappointing team. I was saying that I was on the fence about whether it's even fair to do that, since I kind of went in thinking they might disappoint me. But even for whatever thoughts I had, they still managed to do it. So I would say them. I was a little bit surprised with the Celtics, but they also almost won their first game. So it's, you don't want to put too much on the fact that they didn't get the double overtime win against the Knicks. It was close. So I thought about them a little bit, but they had moments where they looked pretty rough too.
The Celtics, I'm sorry. The Celtics had a very good and needed Al Horford performance on Sunday. Grant Williams looks great. Barely eking out a win that kind of made me a little bit nervous as I was watching against the Houston Rockets. We were talking about it before we started recording. Jalen Green was just hitting every single shot, and he's just not even a human being. I'm thinking about Jalen Green's prime. That's going to be a lot of fun. Oh my God. That dude is someone to watch, definitely. But after the first game for the Celtics, which they could have won if Jason Tatum made a shot, at any point, that would have been wonderful. Horford didn't play in that game. They lose in double overtime, I think. And then the home opener against the Raptors, they just absolutely laid down, and it was atrocious. So they've been disappointing. I don't think they've been, that bad. Jalen and Horford kind of coming back from COVID and everything. And I think they'll be fine. For me, the most disappointing team easily is the Brooklyn Nets. They were blown out by the Bucks in on opening night. They had to come back and kind of barely beat the Sixers on Friday night in a nationally televised game. And it was just like they were hanging around, and I felt like they were going to win the whole time just because they have Kevin Durant. And all you got to do with KD is just like get him in the mid post or run a high pick and roll with him or whatever, and you're going to get a good shot. And then he's just unfair like that. And that's what happened, and they won. And then they were like carved up by Ish Smith and Miles Bridges on Sunday afternoon. And I was just like, what is in their home opener?
Shout out to them losing a game where KD went for almost 40 and shot better than 70%. I mean, and at home and like not that close. I mean, there was that little, I feel like most games in the NBA, I would venture to guess 65% of games in the NBA, when it's like a 20-point game or so, and that like, okay, this is a blowout, but it could get close if a team gets hot for like a 2 or 3 minute stretch. There was that stretch, and you thought maybe they're going to hit the turbo button or hit the Mario star, and they get back into it. And then they got it to like 8 or 10, and then it went back to like 14 or 16. Like, it was a pretty convincing Charlotte win at home, which, and also let's just put it out there. I'm not someone that reads a whole lot into like the off court stuff, but as we talk about distractions, I mean, you literally had MFers out there trying to like burn down the barricades and stuff to stop them from getting into the arena on behalf of like Kyrie Irving. Let me not say on behalf, allegedly. That's what Desus and Mero do when they say something so they don't get sued. But like, it wasn't on his behalf necessarily. He didn't tell them to do it, but why, again, part of why it's
They were chanting his name. They had signs with his name on them.
It's a bad look to, like, you know, kind of have this rally cry, rallying cry about this issue and the way that he's doing it, in my opinion. You had people literally trying to stomp their way into the end of the arena. Do the players know that? Do they sense that? Do they feel it? No, but I don't think these growing pains that the Nets are very clearly going to have, they'd be having if Kyrie were out there, which if he's not going to play, fine. But just kind of the lack of knowing exactly what's going to happen or who you're going to have or how it's going to look or when it's going to change. And I don't doubt that that does weigh on them a little bit.
Right. And especially so when James Harden does not look like James Harden. I think that everything would be fine if James Harden was an MVP, looking like an MVP candidate. If he was getting to the line 8, 9, 10 times a game, instead what we have is he just looks very, very meh, very pedestrian. His career low free throw rate was 0.415 as a rookie. His career average free throw rate is 0.521. That's obviously like his bread and butter. It's why he's one of the most efficient players of all time.
His numbers are insane.
Yeah, and right now, after three games, his free throw rate is 0.184. And there's been a lot of talk about the NBA's rule change and how that has impacted his game. And, you know, I don't think that that rule was specifically meant to target James Harden and pick on James Harden. But it is fair to wonder if referees, who have always had a difficult time, if you ask any referee who the hardest player to officiate is over the past, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, they'll tell you it's Harden. And a lot of that is just how he plays and his ability to draw fouls. And frankly, that's a skill. And I always thought he was unfairly criticized for it. But right now, it's really working to his detriment, and you have these refs who might be in their own heads a little bit, not calling fouls that look like they're fouls, and that's what Steve Nash said after the Hornets' loss. He called Harden a poster boy for the rule change. Harden said sometimes he comes into the game potentially with a stigma of just being the guy who draws fouls, and he thinks that referees are premeditated in how they officiate him, which was an interesting comment. So I think that is definitely something to keep an eye on as the Nets try to work through everything. Because right now, like, one of the most really worrisome stats, and it's only three games, and maybe worrisome is too strong. But Brooklyn had the most efficient offense in NBA history last year. Right now, their offensive efficiency, their offensive rating in 44 minutes with KD and Harden is 96.8. That is so bad. Like, that is Oklahoma City Thunder is like, what's wrong with you guys? That's like how bad that offensive rating is. So you look at kind of the particulars. The Nets are not getting to the rim really at all, settling for a lot more mid-range jumpers, long twos than they did last season. They've been hitting threes. Patty Mills has been on fire this whole season.
Like, I know.
The three-point shot isn't the issue. So I think that there is definitely some cause for concern here if Harden doesn't look like Harden. And then it's like, okay, maybe we do need Kyrie Irving because, you know, if we want to win the championship or if we want to make a finish with a top four ranking in an Eastern Conference that is very competitive, maybe we do need Kyrie. And that just opens up the kind of the floodgates for all these different things that we'll be probably talking about this entire season, unfortunately. But the Nets, to wrap it up, like they've been the most disappointing team to me by far.
Okay. I think it's fair. I mean, I think a lot of that comes down to whether, first of all, I thought Harden, I was looking at Twitter yesterday. People were like, oh, look at Harden whining about the officiating. I actually didn't think he was doing that at all. Like he was pretty matter of fact about it. I think he was raising some questions about whether or not it's kind of premeditated in terms of the way he's officiated. And let's keep it a buck. Like, it probably is or was before, but in his favor, because he was really, really good at what he did, and technically what he was doing to some extent was legal. Now they're basically saying it's not legal, or we're going to really police it a lot harder, and we're going to kind of go in with the assumption that these aren't fouls when you were initiating the contact. And quite frankly, for the people like me that were a little bit pessimistic about Atlanta, this is part of what we were talking about, was the idea that this might really cost a team 5-6 points in a game over the course of a game. You take that and you extrapolate it with somebody like Harden, who, you know, it particularly without Kyrie, is taking on a larger percentage of Brooklyn's offense. That's a lot of offense that he's losing. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about what you just said. His low for his career was 0.415. And just for people that don't really know what these stats mean, free throw rate is basically it's how many free throws you take for every shot you take. So if you have something that's basically 0.5, which I think is kind of what Michael said for his career, that's basically where he's at. He's taking one free throw for every two shots he takes. So if he's now, if that's being cut by a third, or, you know, it's a quarter of what it was before, that's going to show up on the box score of them not having enough points and them not scoring the way they did before. Not to mention that it's two stars instead of three. And not to mention that this is a team that's built to kind of be along the perimeter. So when you don't have Harden getting to the line, who else is really going to do it? Because they're all lining the perimeter trying to shoot threes. So it's a massive difference for their offense. I think it's one that they do get by and get over at some point, and that Harden does figure out a way he always does to draw fouls. I think that officials will probably be a little bit less premeditated over the course of the season. But it's, you know, I'm not disappointed as much in them as with the Lakers, but that is something that they really, really have to figure out. I imagine Harden and Trey and Luka and those guys will at some point.
Yeah, there's a lot of different, you know, lineup changes that can be made. The Nets started the season with Nick Claxton as their starting five, which I hinted as a possibility in a column before the season began, but I didn't think would actually happen, frankly. And he just hasn't looked good at all. He's kind of settling into that role.
Definitely Bruce Brown, defense either.
Yeah, Bruce Brown was like a DNP, I think, in the first game of the season.
Yeah.
Which is just like weird. Just, I don't know. I think Steve Nash is really good. He's my pick for coach of the year, but they've got some lineup things to figure out for sure. And I think generally they'll be okay. We had them in our power ranking, just to kind of circle back to that real quick. We had them at 13. I had them it's probably a mistake, not going to lie, where I had them. I had them at 8. And that,
I did too.
You did? Oh, wow.
I had them at 8.
My goodness.
So that you and I were not the issues. That's how strongly I feel about the fact that they'll figure it out. I mean, even if it's not free throws, Harden and KD can get really hot. Other guys on that roster can get really hot. They've got shooters on that roster. I'm not worried about them from that standpoint. I'm not even quite that worried about them defensively like I was last year. They'll figure it out, but that tells you how lowly everybody else must have rated them if you and I had them at 8. You and I sound like we have the same power rankings, more or less.
We're just, you know, great minds, we think alike, Chris. That's how
it is. Except about American Gladiator.
Exactly. That's exactly right. You've got to take an L on that one, my guy.
I refuse to.
Kind of looking at the exact opposite of the end of the spectrum, there's a few undefeated teams that have been kind of surprising, I think, maybe. You know, they're only 2-0, they're only 3-0, whatever it is. But I'm curious, of the following undefeated teams, I picked three for you, Chris. Which do you think is most likely to kind of keep up their success? We have the Bulls, who just look absolutely incredible, even though their teams that they played are not good, probably. We have the Hornets, the aforementioned Hornets, who looked really good. I think I've watched every Hornets game so far, or at least I saw their win over the Pacers, which was a lot of fun, and then I watched the Nets game yesterday. And the Hornets are just definitely for real. They're incredible. Love them. We talked about LaMelo Ball in our last episode. And then the other team is the Wizards, who are 2-0 and have been pretty impressive for the fact that they did not have Bradley Beal for one of their wins. And I would estimate that in a different time when Bradley Beal would miss games, because he doesn't really miss a lot of time, they're just not very good when he's on the floor, even when Russell was there, when Russell Westbrook was there. So for them to kind of get the W there was a little impressive, and they have more depth now, and I like a lot of the pieces on that roster. But for you, of the Bulls, Hornets, Wizards, which is like the real team here, Chris?
Man, I think you actually kind of gave the answer already just when you were talking about one team that they clearly look for real is Charlotte. I mean,
my bad.
keep in mind, I mean, it's fine, but I think it's kind of an obvious answer, which that's fine. You know, welcome to the show, Hornets. Like, it seems like they're real. It's early, you know, and some of their games have been tight. I think they had the 1-point win over Indiana. You know, they did pull away from the Nets really nicely yesterday, but they're doing this without Terry Rozier, which is nice, which actually kind of begs the question a little bit. I mean, he was very, very good for them last year, but I don't know. Like, when he gets back, the distribution of the ball is a little bit different when he's running the show as opposed to when it's just LaMelo or when you have Ish Smith out there. It's just a little bit of a different feel. It's not that Rozier is hogging the ball or anything like that, but he's a big part of the team. It's just a couple games, so it doesn't, you know, it's not the rest of the season for them, but it's just interesting to think about some of it and the way they look to have him in that position when he gets back. But anyway, what I like about him is just the pace. Obviously, it's a team that that really bears down on you a little bit at times with all the cutting that they do. I'm not a massive Kelly Oubre fan, but on this team, he does kind of fit that role very well. Just another like really athletic guy that can kind of get up and down the floor for the pace they play, who can knock down a three for you every now and then. And the fact that, you know, I think we talked about it a little bit on the last podcast too, the fact that Hayward is there. This is a team that was playoff ready last year, I think, if they were at full strength. They weren't at full strength. They kind of played themselves into a spot with all their injuries where they had to kind of play, literally were in a play-in situation. Didn't have that experience necessarily. And now, I still don't know that they have experience, but I don't know that they need it. I think they're going to be a lot more talented than some of the teams they play, which will make for really fun basketball. You hope that they don't get too full on themselves too quickly. But they'd have a lot of physical and athletic advantages on a lot of the teams they're going to play. And, you know, God forbid their shots fall at a certain rate, because it's going to be hard to beat them.
I love the Hornets. Love everything about them. The Terry Rozier point is a really smart one to make. They're fourth in pace. They're fourth in offense. They're fourth in assist rate. A lot of these guys were around last season when I think they led the league in assist rate last year, and James Borrego just has them playing just a beautiful brand of basketball from his days with the Spurs. Like, they're just so much fun to watch. They're very athletic. If you go to Basketball Reference right now, there's you're aware of this, Chris, the MVP tracker on basketballreference.com. It's obviously very early in the season to be checking this stuff out, but I did because I'm a psycho. And number one on the MVP tracker is Nikola Jokic. Number two is Rudy Gobert. Number three is Steph Curry. Number four is Miles Bridges, your boy. So they just got everything humming right now, and they're hitting outside shots, or at least Miles Bridges is. They're attacking the basket. Defensively, they play these, like, they can go small. They can play Plumlee big now. They actually have a big man who can really fits well in their offensive system, a big man who can rebound, set screens, dive, and pass the ball from the elbows. The Hornets are just kind of like the easy answer here. For the sake of Devil's Advocate, I want to talk about the Bulls for a second because I've watched a bunch of Bulls games.
I've watched a little bit of each of their games so far too.
Yeah, you wrote this fantastic piece about the Chicago Bulls. It's the most interesting team in the league. Everyone should go check that out on SI.com.
And I'll say this, just to interrupt you really quickly. The team that I did that with last year that I thought was most interesting and intriguing last year was Atlanta. Was not really, really high on them. I had questions about them, but they were the team that I thought was like the most fascinating team just based off their offseason last year. It was Atlanta. So I am intrigued by the Bulls, like in the same sort of way where it's like, I think teams that make these big bets in the middle of kind of like, all right, well, we're kind of young, but now we're going to try to throw some bets in the mix and just see what happens. It's been a while since we've been relevant. Let's see what happens. The Bulls are, I think, like an Atlanta light version of that a little bit. I don't think it was quite as all in as Atlanta went. And they didn't have as, I don't know. I think Trey was a little bit more of a star than LaVine was. But it's interesting for exactly the same reasons.
Yeah, so I hear everything that you're saying, and I agree. I mean, the Bulls are just coming in. I think you and I were like the two highest people in all of media on this team. And when you watch them play, like even with Vooch, Vooch doesn't look very good right now, and I think he'll figure it out because he's just a really talented, smart basketball player.
Even in preseason, he looked bad. He was like 1 of 16 from three or something like that.
Yeah. So we'll see about that. We'll monitor that situation. But you have all these offensive options that are really like already kind of figuring out how to coexist at the same time. Like, you'll watch their offense function. It's like Zach LaVine and Vooch will run like a side pick and roll. And then the ball will get swung to DeRozan if they trap LaVine. And DeRozan just all of a sudden has like a little bit of an advantage because his man was, you know, trying to help out on the roll with Vooch. And DeRozan versus like an off-balance defender who isn't even the opponent's best defender is just mincemeat. Like, and so he's just he's so much fun to watch in those situations, on those plays. You know, the DHOs with LaVine, the like Lonzo's kick aheads. I think they're playing with a great pace right now. And I don't know if it's sustainable, but they have like the best or second best or third best defense right now in the whole league.
Yep.
And that was the big thing, obviously, coming into the season. Okay, can they defend? And when you watch them play and you forget about the names and how bad those defenders are, like Alex Caruso is just like changing the culture. Lonzo Ball is just like changing their activity is absolutely tremendous. And so I don't know if it's sustainable. I don't expect them to hold opponents to like 93 points per 100 possessions or whatever it is right now. But their aggressiveness and their wants to create turnovers and then run, I think that's a really smart identity for them. And I'm just fascinated to see how it's going to hold up. And even if it doesn't, I like the prospect of their half court offense and everything that can accomplish. So, I like the Bulls still. And
I like that you brought them up, man. Like I like specifically the way you phrased Caruso, because like you watch him, and I was responding to someone on Twitter about this very point and the idea that You watch him play, and it looks like he single-handedly wants to change the reputation there in terms of, like, okay, we heard what y'all said about our defense. Nah, we're gonna be really good. Like, he just runs around like a madman most of the time. And Lonzo kind of does the same thing, just taller, you know, and probably more athletic than Caruso. So there's that aspect of it. Javonte Green off their bench operates that way too. They're just extremely, like, I think they're fourth in the league in deflections per game, which I know that's not everything. But for a team like that, that may not have all the most physical advantages in the league, certainly in terms of rim protection, they don't really have like a really established guy that's just nimble around the rim. It'll actually be interesting. I think that I think Vooch might be questionable tonight to play, and so they might have to play Patrick Williams at the five a lot more, which I think me and some of my friends are kind of curious to see. Because he's got some good instincts there, and sometimes he's not quite in the right position to play four. But if he – five, it's weird. Five is a more important position, but in some ways it can potentially simplify certain things depending on what you're playing against. And he's certainly more athletic than Vooch is, and so that'll be interesting to watch. But, man, they just get to they come and help at the right times. A lot of times, I don't think they've taken a single charge. So it's not like the Kyle Lowry help where you step up and you force a charge. It's just that they're in the right places. They're kind of getting their hands in there. DeRozan still looks like DeRozan defensively. But a lot of the other stuff has been really positive. And I am finding myself asking the question that I think you're asking is like, how much of this is them playing the Pistons a couple of times in the first week? Versus how much of this is like, there's some pretty positive things to pull from this, and they look like they could actually play some defense. And I kind of thought that going in. I kind of waffled on a little bit. I wrote an off-season piece where I talked about the potential of them being a top 10 defense, and a lot of people that I respect, I can't remember if you did. I don't think you did because you're too friendly. But
I
they
never
were like,
come at you, Chris.
Except when it's over American Gladiator. Somebody that I respect, I can't remember who it was anymore, they were like, top 10, Chris? Like, Bulls defense? Like, you might be seeing something different than I'm seeing. Even Bulls fans were like, I really like this piece. It's really high on the Bulls, but top 10 seems a little bit too favorable. It probably was, so I scaled back on it when I wrote about them again last week and kind of raised it as more of a question. But they do have guys that are really big impact defenders at the point of attack. Top 10 is probably too high, but they don't even need to be that high to be a really, really good team because you know their offense will get better as they get more comfortable. And you know their defense hopefully will settle in. You would hope it will settle in even when they start to play tougher opponents.
Your point about Patrick Williams playing the five just is like brilliantly leads us into our first email of the episode. The Bulls are playing the Toronto Raptors, which is just like a fascinating team to play if you're going to go super small. And that's exactly what our emailer, our listener, Adrian, writes in about. He writes, Dear Open Floor, thank you so much for making some of the most engaging, entertaining, and insightful NBA content out there. I began following the pod when the pandemic hit North America in spring 2020, and my podcast consumption went up at least 200%. Honestly, listening to Open Floor each week has been a consistent highlight that has helped me get through some tough days when we could only dream of watching our favorite players hoop live again. So my sincere thanks to Michael, Rohan, Chris, and of course, the gone but not forgotten Ben Golliver. Shout out to Golliver, always and forever. My hometown, Toronto Raptors, have made it clear they are doubling down on positionless basketball and fielding a platoon of long two-way athletes, envisioning that speed and skill can overcome size and individual star power. My question to you guys is which NBA team, as presently constructed, could field the most intriguing positionless lineup that could dominate the league? Would love to know your thoughts. All the very best, and thank you again. Thank you, Adrian. That's very kind words and a wonderful question, fascinating question. When I think about basketball and I watch basketball, I always want the smallest, most like-sized lineups on the court. I'm sorry to centers. I'm sorry to traditional point guards. That's just how I feel right now. So I always think about this anyway. And I was actually watching the Kings-Warriors game last night. And I was actually I watched it this morning, but it was played last night.
It was a good game.
It was a really entertaining game. And I kept calling for, I was yelling in, I was in my bed, watching on my laptop, yelling at Luke Walton to please play Davion Mitchell, De'Aaron Fox, Tyrese Halliburton, Harrison Barnes, and Buddy Hield at the same time. And I don't think we got that. We did not. Those that lineup right there, I am so fascinated by, because Mitchell is like his
one of your favorite players in the league already.
He leaves me speechless. Like, his teammates we're talking him up as the best on-ball defender in the entire NBA before the season began. And I'm like, okay, please stop talking. And then you watch him on Dame in the opener. He's like shutting down Damian Lillard. You watch him against the Jazz. He's straight up humiliating Donovan Mitchell. Like, there was that play, I don't know if you saw it. I tweeted it immediately when I saw it, but like, Donovan drives at him, and Mitchell just like really stands his ground, backpedals, stays in front of him, isn't falling for the change of pace, isn't falling for the Euro step, and then just reaches out and rips the ball away and takes it the other way, and they get a lob out of it. And I was just like, this dude is something special. I'm all for it. So when we talk about positionlessness, being able to defend multiple positions is basically everything, in my opinion. That is the number one core attribute. And obviously I have Buddy Hield in this group, which is trouble. But everybody else I think is pretty solid and pretty flexible and adaptable on defense. I think their rebounding might be an issue. But if you have guys who won't let their man and like drive by them and force you into rotations, you're in pretty good shape. And so I like this group, and offensively it kind of speaks for itself. There's just so much firepower here. So that's the one that kind of popped into my head. I don't know if they would dominate the league, Chris, but that'd be a fun one. What do you think?
Oh, super fun. And I know you. I've been podcasting with you long enough to know that you were going to find one that was kind of an interesting in the weeds. You know, you twist it this way and you look at it from that angle. Certainly. And I kind of thought about that. And I was like, since I know Michael's going to do that, let me just keep it simple. Because literally what I put in my notes here for this is like, we could overcomplicate this and make it fun and interesting and pretty. You could also just pick the Milwaukee Bucks. I mean, any Giannis that you any lineup you bring Giannis into and make him essentially your center is a wrecking ball, relatively speaking. If he's the one guy in your lineup that can't shoot, particularly if he improves as a shooter, like, good luck. And you know, I've been intrigued with the smaller lineup for years now, but you know, I think for as long as Golden State's reign lasted, it was pretty much a question of who's going to beat the death lineup when it comes down to it. And until there's really an answer to that, we might not see somebody beat the Warrior. So I mean, I think it's interesting always to think about five-man lineups. I think that the Bucks, ideally, when they get DiVincenzo back, it'll be something that's easier for them to do, to just have another guy on the court. I think they're more or less kind of trotting Grayson Allen out there now, which I think he's fine. I think that DiVincenzo at full health is better than he is. So we'll see. You know, but I basically think, you know, you take their top three, obviously Drew and Chris Middleton. You take Giannis. I think you take, you know, you could even swap certain guys out. I don't love the idea of Portis out there, but if you just want to rain threes on people and have that threat, and if he's going to play like Finals Bobby Portis and Mayor Bobby Portis, then maybe even throw him into that mix. You know, I tend to think that someone will.
What do you think about Jordan Mora?
I want to see him more, but certainly there have been moments already where it's like, okay, this guy's a threat. And, you know, there have been a couple guys, quite frankly. You know, Duarte from the Pacers, man, is like on some other stuff already. There's some talent in this class. It's just really – I think for me, some people will be like, well, duh, I could have told you that. How did you not know that? I don't really watch much college basketball outside of Michigan. I don't have the time. We're tasked with watching so much pro basketball. You know, shout out to Jeremy Wu and different people that have to watch – the college level.
Actually, can I interject? We're sending the shout out to Jeremy Wu for the blasphemous ranking that he had, where he had the Boston Celtics in his power ranking. I'm sorry, Wu. We'll not be discussed or mentioned ever again on the Open Floor podcast. Continue, Chris. I'm sorry.
I will continue. But just generally, man, no, there's some real shooters in this class. There's some real players in this class. We've already talked about Mitchell, obviously. We haven't even seen Cade Cunningham yet. Jalen Green has been really impressive in moments, mm-hmm. certainly in that game against the Celtics. It's been really fun to watch it. Also, Franz Wagner had a really nice game yesterday against Michigan. The Knicks. Yeah, and I knew he was, I watched him plenty, so I know he's good, but there's a lot of guys that just have so much upside, seemingly, and they're making impacts already in their first week in the game. So, anyway, yeah, Nora could be a possibility there, too. I mean, I think my point is that I think you basically have four guys that I think DiVincenzo is one of the four you would want, and then that fifth spot is just kind of open. Like, they've got so many guys on that roster that could potentially fill it. If you go a little bit bigger with somebody like Portis and you want that threat there, if you want to go with Nora, if you wanted to use Grayson Allen, I guess you could theoretically, but it, you know, to be determined on who the fifth guy is. But I think DiVincenzo along with Holiday, Middleton, Giannis, if you want to take your chances with that, so be it. But it's enough creation, enough shooting, certainly enough defense, and it would be a scary unit for anybody to have to play against.
Yeah, I mean, the Buck, obviously Giannis let you do really fascinating things because he's Giannis, and enough said. I thought you were going to say the Warriors, to be honest, when you were like, I'm just going to keep this really simple and obvious.
Not yet. I keep saying it. This is my broken record. I want to see Clay back first. I mean, once you get Clay back, I think the potential for that, throwing him out there, throwing Steph out there, Poole, Draymond, I mean, it's potentially scary. But I think, for me, I need to see Clay do it. I need to see Clay, and then really, I need to see Clay defend, because I think for me that was the part of his game that was always a little bit underrated, and it kind of vacillates between being underrated, overrated, underrated. But I think for me to be able to see him come back and do that and guard key guys in big mm-hmm. moments, I think to me that actually is a better sign of whether he's back versus whether he can shoot and whether or not he can sustain the idea of just racing from one baseline to the other. You know, and wearing out a defender that has to stay with them the whole game. If he's able to do that and sustain that, to me, that's more of a test of who Clay is and whether he's back than just whether or not he can shoot accurately. I think he's always going to be able to do that.
Yeah, I would love to hear from our listeners what they think about this question, because it's one of my favorites. Please keep bring your opinions to the table. Openfloormail@gmail.com. Openfloormail@gmail.com. We're going to close this episode with a fun one, a fun random question from Chris, who writes, question.
It's not from me. You have to specify this is not from me.
It is not from Chris Herring. It is from Chris, the brilliant emailer whose last name is escaping me at the moment. But Chris, shout out to you. You'll know. I believe, actually, I didn't have this in the outline, but this email from Chris, the subject head is actually non-rom-com email for once. So just a lot of shade. I'm saying that's shade at Rohan and not me or you, Herring. So we'll let that be what it is. But Chris's email, which is very fun, we'll close on it. Chris writes, which player, current or otherwise, would make you go down the YouTube rabbit hole? Kobe's my guy, but I'm inexorably drawn to Steph Curry. Just a real simple question that it just broke my brain, honestly. There's so many players, so many options. I'll throw it to you first, Chris. Where did your head go when I'm not even a YouTube rabbit hole type of person, just being honest, I don't really mess around with YouTube. I'm afraid of it. But where did your head go when you saw this? Is it players from the 60s and 70s and 80s?
No.
Or is it just who, Allen Iverson? Who is it?
I think it trends back closer to that. It trends back closer to guys that I watched, but wasn't a basketball head yet to really watch the nuances and really formulate the opinions. It was just kind of oh, this guy scores a lot. And so, you know, and being able to watch how they do it and how they move and how they kind of shake guys, that's kind of the era that I go back and watch, is really like the 90s, like early 2000s, like mid 2000s. So the guy I picked here was Brandon Roy.
I love it.
When your outline came through via email last night, I was sitting and watching, kind of flipping back and forth between a couple games, but the Knicks and the Magic were playing. And Mike Breen basically laid out a comparison to Clyde Frazier. And he was like, he reminds me, he was talking about Suggs. And he said, he reminds me, he even kind of looks like him a little bit. He reminds me of Brandon Roy. And he was just talking about kind of like just how smooth he was, but how he could kind of beat you in a different ways. Now, in that way, I'd like to see Suggs do a little bit more. Suggs is certainly a really compact sort of guy. Breen was bringing up the fact that he was Mr. Basketball and Mr. Football in his state at the high school level. That he was just a really brilliant football player as well. But, you know, I think Brandon Roy was even bigger than Suggs is, if I remember correctly. I think probably by a decent amount, too, you know, in terms of how big Brandon Roy was. So the fact, like, when you sit and watch his clips, man, and I've done this before, whenever – I feel like whenever you see someone post clips on Twitter, they're like, man, people are sleeping on how good this person used to be. And I don't think it's that we're sleeping on it. I think it's that, like, they – a whole generation of people haven't seen them play. Or people like me who, like, now we have to focus on the game a certain way, and we do. But, like, at the time, I wasn't – you know, I wasn't – a writer who was being paid to have an opinion and analyze the sport. So going back and watching the guys that came just before that period, maybe a few years before, Brandon Roy to me is the most fascinating of those guys because he could do a little bit of everything. He was smooth. He could, I mean, he had the clutch gene kind of the same way that Dame does in some ways. Just strong, you know, could get to you from either direction, left, right, could take you all the way to the basket, had a little bit of a step back before it was really a more widespread thing, just a smooth scorer, man. And a guy that would have been really fun to watch in this generation. Not generation, but like in this span of time.
Oh, yeah. Like his knees, one of the great tragedies, straight up. Like the bone on bone, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, he had a cartilage issue in his knees that was just too painful for him to play basketball and jump up and down. And huge bummer because that dude was incredible. I just remember his last big moment was the 2011 playoffs, that series. I think it was in the first round between the Blazers and the Mavs. Do you remember that? Like Brandon Roy just like went off on that championship Mavs team. And it was just like, this dude is amazing. Like he's not even like 100% healthy right now. And he's just absolutely.
I'm drawn to that. Like, I think I'm drawn to guys that it's like, what could have been? So him, you know, I don't feel like we had as much of Odin to really watch with that. I think it tends to be guys for me that are wing players that, you know, that just athletically didn't have it or couldn't do it anymore. So there's him, Penny, Grant Hill, obviously we know about Rose, you know. So I tend to go down that rabbit hole. I'm a nostalgic guy, and I look at stuff where guys like just they never had the career that they should have, or it's very clear that they would have. And so I look at a lot of videos of those guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, speaking of nostalgia, I mean, you can't go wrong with, like, just thinking off the top of my head, the 93 Charlotte Hornets. I mean, Larry Johnson, Alonzo Mourning, Kendall Gill, Dell Curry, Muggsy Bogues. Shout out to our colleague Chris Mannix. we're having a little fun at his expense. Chris tweeted the other day that this Hornets team this season is the first one that has ever been fun to watch, and
they cooked that boy in the tweets. I'm still getting tweets. I guarantee you, if I were to check my Twitter right now, the last 30 at mentions that I would have would be with me and him on there. Because I tried to tell him, I'm like, Chris, man, I don't know if you want to say that. I don't know if that's accurate. Even in my book, I had to do some research on that Hornets team, that exact Hornets team from, I think, 93, because the Knicks got them in a playoff series, and they not only had a number one overall pick in Larry Johnson, who was as athletic as they come, and still would be athletic by today's standards, by the way. Him, Alonzo Mourning, Muggsy Bogues, probably the fastest, shortest player in the league, who had a huge following on his own. A brand new arena, sold out games every single night. They had a sellout streak of almost 10 years. I think it was like 8 years in a row. And they had a 25,000 seat stadium. So like not the sellouts today that like the Knicks have 19,000, 20,000. Bulls have 20,000. Hornets have like 25.
I did not know that.
Coolest uniforms.
Wow.
The starter jackets, man.
Oh, yeah.
They were fun. And they had Del Curry. They had guys that could shoot. It was like they were before their time. They would have been, they could have been a super team. But Larry Johnson had back issues. The owner cheaped out. Larry Johnson and Lonzo Mourning didn't like each other after a while. So it wasn't going to last. But, man, they got out to such a hot start with that franchise. And they were so popular. I couldn't believe he tweeted that. But I have brain farts like that, too. But people are still in his mentions. They're still in my mentions, you know, because I tweeted at him to try to kind of lend him a lifeline. But, yeah, that the Hornets were fun. And I don't even – like, not to knock today's Hornets, but they're not of that caliber as far as, like, how much fun they are now. Because those Hornets were more fun than these Hornets, in my opinion.
Shout out to Chris Mannix. Shout out to Grandmama. I don't really have I guess, honestly, if I were to pick if I have a serious answer for this, it would probably be like David Robinson. David Robinson was my favorite player growing up. And they just don't make him like David Robinson anymore. Like, I remember when it was like 2 years ago, but like DeAndre Ayton coming out, and people were making the comparisons between Ayton and David Robinson. It's like, let's cut that out right now. David Robinson.
Scoring champion. Yeah.
Greek God. Like, that man had 74 points in a basketball game. He had a quadruple double. Like, he was everything. League MVP. So yeah, shout out to David Robinson. Go watch those highlights if you haven't seen them. He is
a beast defensively, incredible. Too, man. And I mean, the 90s were so interesting because of the center play at the time, too. So I kind of feel like that's one of the reasons it's really hard to compare any of the centers now to those guys back then, because you had to be strong. And I mean, like Shaq, Hakeem, Ewing, Robinson, and Robinson could not only hold his own against those guys. I know I had to study Ewing for what I was doing separately. Like, there were two guys that Ewing really couldn't score on and just was not effective against, and it was Hakeem and it was David Robinson. Like, they regularly kind of got it handed to them by the Spurs because he just had nothing for them. And basically John Starks became their primary scorer because, you know, they basically could not go inside to Ewing against David Robinson. It just didn't work. And lo and behold, they lost the finals to him. Now, that was not because of Ewing. He was not able to play. But, you know, he had pretty barren rosters there in San Antonio until they got Tim Duncan. So I'm happy that he got that towards the end of his career because he was doing it all by himself, and he was a beast.
I think that is the most perfect place to end an episode. I love David Robinson so much. One of my all-time favorite players.
I did not know
everyone
that.
Yeah, he's like the king. He's the only T-shirt jersey. I have a Team USA David Robinson T-shirt jersey. It's like the only NBA related. That's not true. I'm not going to talk about all my Celtics stuff, but that's the only.
You just outed yourself. You ain't even have to do that. No one was going to know.
I know. I apologize to myself from 10 seconds ago. That's just a great place to end. Thank you so much to all of our listeners, to all of our emailers. Keep the emails coming in. openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Everybody, please stay safe. Everybody, please continue to enjoy the NBA season. Whoa.
Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make high-quality clothing for a summer wardrobe you'll love, all made right here in the USA. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy and Planet Fitness for $15 a month?
They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster.
That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.